WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. You're probably familiar with baseball stars like Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, and Lou Gehrig. But how about other standouts like Josh Gibson, Buck Leonard, or Oscar Charleston? They were players in the Negro Leagues, where black players competed after they were banned from joining white teams in the early 20th century. And just this week, after a years-long process, Negro Leagues stats were officially added to Major League Baseball's record books. So to learn more about the Negro Leagues and the significance of these players' stats, I sat down with Larry Lester. Larry is the co-founder of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City and is the author of several books like Black Baseball in Chicago and Baseball's First Colored World Series. Here's Larry explaining what this changes.
The integration or the merging of stats, Negro League stats with Major League Baseball is a big deal. It finally validates their greatness, their feats on the field and their achievements. It's long overdue. The process was tedious and very labor intensive. For the simple fact, we had to identify league games and league games only for this statistical project. We did not add in exhibition games or interleague games. So we know the stats are solid. They've been validated through a variety of data integrity checks. You know, we write queries and run up against the database to check for any errors because the ledger between the batters and the pitchers must balance. So,
right. So help us understand, what exactly does this change? Like, I know, for instance, Major League Baseball now has a new all-time batting leader, right?
Yes. And Josh Gibson, he's now the leader in on-base percentages and the leader for the highest batting average in the season, surpassing Ty Cobb and others, Babe Ruth.
Wow.
He very well deserved honor for Josh Gibson. He's an incredible catcher and unique in that, unlike most home run hitters, he seldom struck out. And that's the beauty of Josh Gibson. He hit a lot of home runs. He hit for high average, outstanding catcher, and a great honor to be finally recognized by the powers to be.
Yeah. Your work was instrumental here, too. You went through thousands of baseball box scores in black newspapers, and you collected and organized all that data. Talk more about that process.
Well, I've been doing this for about 40 years. Before the internet came along, I would order microfilm from black newspapers across the country and go through reel by reel and make copies of box scores.
Wow, that's incredible.
Roughly 450 newspapers I had access to, the majority of them black newspapers, because the white newspapers did not cover the games for whatever reasons. So it was a labor-intensive project and put a lot of dimes in the microfilm machine to make a copy. And it took a while to create a database. I'm an IT professional and input the data manually. There's no software today or app that can scan a box score
that
will populate a database. And so I had to input every line, every batter, hit, run, hit, double, triple, home run, walk, strikeout, error by pitchers and batters for each box scores.
That's a lot of work.
It is, but I loved it. It was just curious about are these players as great as the stories that we hear? Mm-hmm. You know, stats are shorthand for stories. So now I can say, yes, Josh Gibson is the greatest home run hitter to ever play the game, because I have the stats to prove that, validate my argument. And so it makes for a good barroom discussion, good topic to have in a barbershop, but it's a labor intense. It takes about a half an hour just to input one box score, and I have roughly 16,000 of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was a fun journey. And then the internet came along, and I was able to access other newspapers that I didn't have before, and complete the process. You know, the black newspapers, Sasha, had so much information. I mean,
yeah,
box scores, they had play by plays, editorials, biographies about certain ball players. It's all right there.
Can you tell us some more about, you know, some of the players that have made the leaderboards?
We got Chino Smith. He batted .451 in 1929 for the New York Lincoln Giants. A relatively unknown character because he died at the age of 30. I think he died of TB, but he didn't have a long career, so he drops off everybody's radar.
Okay.
For the 8 years that he played in the Negro Leagues, he had an outstanding batting average, a solid line drive hitter. So he's going to finally get recognized as probably having the fourth or fifth best seasonal batting average in Major League Baseball history.
Wow.
But there are a lot of ball players who will get recognition. Oscar Charleston, John Henry Pop Lloyd, they all play with Chicago. Other Chicago Hall of Famers like pitcher Jose Mendez and Satchel Paige and the great Cuban, who they often called the Black Babe Ruth, Cristobal Torriente, Willie the Devil Wells, Smokey Joe Williams, Mule Suttles and Turkey Stearns, Pete Hill. They all played for Chicago-based teams. Finally get recognition.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, white newspapers not covering this at the time. But before the Negro Leagues, though, was there ever a time when black and white players did play together and compete against each other?
Oh, most definitely. After the season, they would compete in all-star games and postseason play. We keep track of those records, which, of course, are not included in the database. But we keep track of those records, and the black teams won about 60 to 65% of those games. You might have the Satchel Paige All-Stars play the Dizzy Dean All-Stars or the Bob Feller All-Stars. And the Babe Ruth All-Stars would play against a Negro All-Star team. And in most cases, Babe Ruth All-Stars lost for whatever reason.
Really?
The black teams are just more energized and more savvy on, and more black teams exploited the rules to their advantage. They were still more bases, more hit and run style of play. And so they were more aggressive on the base paths, a lot of bunt and run, double steals, and white teams are just not ready for the up-tempo type of play. And so they won more games.
Right. But, and you talked about Chicago in there. I mean, who were the Chicago American Giants? Tell us more, and just about the popularity of black baseball in Chicago.
Popularity in Chicago for black baseball really rocked. In 1920, when Rube Foster started the Negro National League, they had two black teams just like the White Sox and the Cubs. They were called the Chicago Giants and the Chicago American Giants, owned by Rube Foster. The Chicago American Giants won the pennant in 1920, 21, and 22. And then in 1923 and 24, my Kansas City Monarchs took the pennant and played in the first colored World Series, as it was called at that time, against the Hilldale Club out of Derby, Pennsylvania. So until 1923, the Chicago American Giants were a dominant team because of Rube Foster's influence He was the founder of the Negro National League and the owner and manager. So,
Okay.
A lot of great history there.
Larry, it wasn't until 2020 that MLB recognized seven black leagues as major leagues. What was it that prompted that change?
I think the change was prompted by social awareness across the country. We're dealing with COVID and the death of George Floyd on March the 25th, 2020. And so the country is starting to address some of the racial atrocities and injustices for many past decades. And so I think it was time for baseball to have this reckoning and say, why not? Why haven't we included black stats into the Major League Encyclopedia? It was just time for a change, you know, coming off the heels of Colin Kaepernick's protests of police brutality and the killing of Trayvon Martin and Sandra Lamb. That's too many to list, but it was time to address those racial atrocities and to deal with the systemic racism, microaggressions that were permeated in this country in 2020. So I think it was a wake-up call, and I welcome the challenge for this social reparation of including stats in the Major League Baseball Encyclopedia.
Right. Let's talk more about a Negro League player who you mentioned earlier, but I mean, he really made age just a number. What else can you share about Leroy Satchel Paige?
Well, Leroy Satchel Paige for many years was the face of the Negro Leagues. Tall. Mm-hmm. Tan,
6'3".
Yes. Lanky. Had a gift for gab. Great showmanship. Talked a lot of trash. And all the teams wanted him. He was a gate attraction, without a doubt. And
he made his debut at 42 years old, at least his American League debut.
Oh, in 1965. Yeah, with the Kansas City Athletics. I went to that game in 65.
Did you?
He was, yes. Satchel was 59 years old at that game.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that was the last game he played for Major League Baseball. But yeah, you're right. In 1948, he made his debut at the age of 42 with the Cleveland Indians.
Yes.
And it's quite the debut. According to newspaper accounts, when he made that start in July of 1948, more than 72,000 fans showed up for that game. I mean, 72,000 fans for a baseball game is incredible.
Yeah.
And according to newspaper accounts, more than 20,000 fans were turned away. And he shut out the Chicago White Sox 5-0 that game. Came back 6 days later, another sellout crowd at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium of 78,000 came to see this tall, lanky fella from the Negro Leagues. And wow, another sellout, and he threw another shutout. So
amazing.
I mean, an old man doing this is phenomenal. And to have 78,000 people at a night game, which is still a record for attendance at any night game in Major League Baseball, is like college football, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Cotton Bowl numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The attendance was incredible. So Satchel's nimble, Satchel's quick. Satchel's making the turnstiles click.
Larry, how many games have you been to?
Oh, I have no idea.
You haven't been keeping count?
No, I grew up near the old ballpark in Kansas City on 22nd in Brooklyn. And
that's a stat you should have been keeping track of.
Yeah, I go to maybe 4 or 5 games every series since the age of 10. So
a lot.
Yeah, I mean, for $1.50, I could get in, and for 15 cents, I could buy a scorecard and a pencil. I kept score. That's why I learned math. Incredible youth. I enjoyed it. I didn't have a curfew, so I could stay as long as I wanted.
So. Yeah. You know, it's clear as I'm listening to you talk, I mean, there was a lot of talent in the Negro Leagues. We are recognizing that talent and all that work now. But I wonder if people actually saw them as baseball stars back then. Like, were they household names among African Americans in their heyday?
Yes, they were household names in their heyday because of the Black press. To read the editorials and the game reviews by the great writers like Sam Lacy and Wendell Smith and Ira Lewis were phenomenal. They were revered. There are lots of photographs of them with entertainers like Louis Armstrong and Count Basie, Lionel Hampton, Lena Horne. They were considered high class personalities, for a better word. It was just a great day. They hung out at the best restaurants, the best hotels, and lots of newspaper coverage. Tremendous, you know.
So if people are interested in learning more about this history and they happen to be passing through Kansas City, Missouri, folks can always visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Tell us what museum goers will find there, Larry.
Well, when you walk into the museum, you'll see a timeline that I made from an Excel spreadsheet that shows all the teams in the Negro Leagues from 1920 through roughly 1955, years that they played, what championships they won. It's all color-coded, and what World Series they won. The designers just took the spreadsheet and made a very long graphic timeline. Mm-hmm. We had roughly 75 different Negro League teams during that period. And as you enter the museum, there's a video about a short history of the Negro Leagues, mm-hmm. and some statues of some of the Hall of Famers, and a lot of static exhibits. A lot of photographs have been blown up life-size that come from my personal collection of thousands of photographs.
Right.
And I wrote all the captions. If you find any errors, don't let me know about them. I only got to sing in English.
You got some virtual exhibits online right now, too?
Yes. Discover Greatness is one, and a few others. But no, it was fun working with ESA designers out of Abilene, Kansas. They did a great job of bringing the Negro Leagues back to life. So it's not only is it about baseball, it's about history, social history, and civil rights history. So it's more than just baseball history.
What do you think this moment means right now for the legacy of Black ball players?
For the legacy of Black ball players, this is an eye-opening opportunity for the naysayers and those who have ignored the fact that Black baseball was a product of segregated America. Now they have to open their eyes and realize that these ball players were real. Mm-hmm. You know, they used the same equipment, played in the same ballparks, played under the same rules. And so there's no excuse not to recognize their talent and their achievements to the game. So this is a wake-up call for people who just refuse to recognize the greatness of Black ball players who played between the white foul lines.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What a way to put it. Larry Lester is the co-founder of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri, and author of several books like Black Baseball in Chicago and Baseball's First Colored World Series. Larry, thank you so much for that history and for joining us here on Reset.
Thank you, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced and mixed by Micah Yason, and it was edited by Daniel Tucker. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. We feature local stories and give out great recommendations for events in the Chicago area. You can find the sign up and our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely